You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am your host, Michael Cathcart. Joining me as always,
Elliot Gilland. Hi.
Hey, Elliot. Thank you again for being here.
Yeah.
Just before we get started with the show, I would like to let our listeners know that KBOO's spring membership drive has been canceled due to the ongoing pandemic and the current stay-at-home order in the state of Oregon. But now, more than ever, volunteer-run Community Power Radio is a critically important free resource providing much-needed information, entertainment, and a sense of connection to us all during this time of uncertainty and isolation. Since the membership drive has been canceled, this is the time to give. If you can, please show your support by going to kboo.org/give. Thank you so much. And now on to our show. Obviously, you know, we are broadcasting from the quarantine zone here.
Yes.
Normally we would be in the beautiful KBOO studios, but we are doing this from my couch at the moment. We're going to discuss the majority of the show is going to be just discussing the state of working people during this pandemic, especially focusing on essential people who have been deemed essential workers. Mm-hmm. The first thing to note, you know, before we jump into any of this, is that over the last month, basically, there have been 22 million Americans who have filed for unemployment, which is, you know, this is worse
crazy.
Than, yeah, like this is unprecedented. You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I have to imagine this is worse than any single month period during the 2008 recession.
Yeah.
And this is approaching, like, you know, 1929 recession numbers. But, you know, basically beyond that, that means that there are, you know, in the state of Oregon and around the country, there are a ton of people who have not only lost their jobs, but also, you know, lost, you know, what comes with that. So obviously their income, their stability.
Healthcare
is a big thing in the middle of a pandemic, which,
yep.
You know, could be affecting a lot of people without them realizing at the time. So all of these things have created a very precarious situation for workers. And as of yet, there has been very little, like, solid support coming from the people in charge, you know, particularly our politicians, but also industry leaders. And so we're going to sort of dive into that today and look at the things that have been lacking and the things that are being proposed to help workers get through this time of crisis.
Yep.
So, you know, just as we move forward here, obviously, you know, if you've been paying any attention at all, which it's hard to avoid at this point, there's been some pretty scary rhetoric being thrown around regarding what needs to happen with the economy and sort of the sacrifices that need to be made. Just basically, yeah, there's been some shocking rhetoric being thrown around surrounding this crisis. On the left, you have a lot of people calling for, you know, fairly radical proposals, particularly things like relief payments, you know, consistent monthly relief payments to all Americans, things like rent and debt freezes, like mortgage freezes and mm-hmm. student debt freezes, and just generally providing more support for working people. And, you know, included in that would be like protective equipment, things like that. But, you know, the counterpart on the right wing, we're hearing a lot of pretty morbid assessments and calls. You know, a couple weeks ago, there was a big push to, you know, I don't know if it was coordinated, but you definitely saw a united front around the concept of, like, well, maybe grandparents are all right with putting themselves at risk so that their children don't have an economic crisis.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to have, you know, some necessary deaths and things like that.
Yeah. The narrative, yeah. if you could chart the narrative of, like,
yeah.
kind of the media stories around the pandemic, it's really been from a right-wing perspective, there's been a lot of, like, at first it was catching up. Like, no, we knew that this was a really big deal, you know, early on, and we did everything we could. And then now it's kind of shifted from that to, well, you know, you're putting people at even more risk by not rebooting the economy, right? Because we can't help all of these people. And I mean, I think to a certain extent, you know, if this thing goes 18 months, I think that is somewhat, you know, we're going to have to address that at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But I think for right now, as we're still flattening the curve, you know, and following the directions of all of, you know, kind of our smartest medical minds, you know, now's not the time to kind of get antsy and start trying to get back out into the world and start restarting the economy. I think you saw there were a ton of videos online of protests over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I definitely think the narrative is shifting. And I think the kind of libertarian movement that's been happening like the last 5 or 6 years is definitely eating this stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a, hey, don't take my rights perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, we could get into that on a whole nother episode of the show, but I think we're here to talk about kind of labor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely think the narrative around this has been changing like day by day. So it's really hard to stay ahead of it.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of competing narratives and a lot of pretty grim assessments happening out there.
Yeah.
But I think the one narrative that really does cut through or really has been persistent and proven to be true over and over again is that, you know, something that we've talked about a lot in the show and that anyone who is, you know, a working person or in you know, the labor movement recognizes that there are people doing jobs in this country that are 100% essential to the functioning of our society who have not at any time prior to this received the necessary recognition or support requisite to what their job is. And so right now, you know, we're kind of seeing a shift in that. We're seeing a shift towards recognizing quote-unquote essential workers and deeming certain positions essential workers. And obviously during a pandemic, people like healthcare workers, nurses and doctors and EMTs and paramedics, they are all essential workers, of course.
Yeah.
But along with that, in that same grouping are people like grocery store workers and USPS, like Postal Service delivery people, FedEx delivery people, UPS, people like that. People who, like janitors, people who are doing the work that is 100% essential to making sure society continues functioning and continues to roll on. But never get the credit for how important their role is and often don't get the pay or the benefits to coincide with that.
And I think too, like, you know, we've talked a ton of, you know, a ton about like the gig economy and kind of the shared economy and all of these new jobs that are basically have propped up new entire industries that aren't regulated in the same manners as, you know, like some, you know, industry that's been around for 200 years. So I think that too, we're basically kind of seeing a lot of stuff happen on the Uber, you know, Lyft, like what is essential, who isn't, like who's being recognized, who's being taken care of, you know, who gets 2 weeks paid, you know, sick leave, you know, kind of that. Like if you're paid by your, how many drives you make on Uber, what does that mean for you as basically a worker if you get coronavirus? So I definitely think there has been a lack. I think there's a distinct lack of regulation and kind of oversight that's been happening. And you know, COVID-19 and the situation that we're in is bringing to light all of these things that have been overlooked.
Exactly. Like that's, I think, the main point that is becoming clear is that, like, this crisis, a lot of the issues that are being, this crisis is showing bare a lot of cracks in the way that our economy and our society are set up that are not directly a result of this crisis, but rather have been existent for a long time or are kind of baked into the system that are just now becoming clear because we are in this crisis. And, you know, like exactly like you said, the mass precariat or the people who do jobs, you know, the mass shifting of people into contract positions. So that means that that removes any chance they would get employer provided health care and things like that. That just shows bare the need to divorce health care from your employment and why that's such a terrible system when you have, at the same time you have mass layoffs and unemployment claims during the time when people most need their health insurance.
Yeah.
And realizing like, wow, maybe coupling health insurance to your job is a crazy thing.
I think it's one of those things like the same way that, you know, if a new religion popped up today, it would feel a lot different because the names would not be, you know, these things. I think there's a lot of assumptions that are built in to these things because that's how the way they work, because they've been that way for a really long time, right? But if we were to all of a sudden change and like your children's education was paid for by your work and you got laid off and then your kids couldn't go to school anymore, I think there's such an expectation there that that's not how we run things, right? But I think healthcare is becoming slowly one of those things that people are seeing, obviously, as a human right and as something that has to be divorced from kind of whatever economic situation that we're in.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, we are now towards the end of April. And you know, the campaign for president of Bernie Sanders has, you know, been suspended. It is officially over. Mm-hmm. But, you know, despite the fact that electorally that did not succeed, I think that if you look at polling data and if you look at just general, you know, sentiment, I think that the message, a lot of the messages of the campaign, particularly surrounding healthcare, have resonated and will continue moving forward. Like, it has opened up the imagination. It has broadened the imagination of what American people can expect, or what they should expect from their government. And so I think that, you know, healthcare, this will continue to be an issue, and this crisis will be a radicalizing moment for people to realize that nationalized, you know, cohesive, affordable healthcare is an essential part of, you know, living the quote-unquote American dream. But yeah, just moving ahead in sort of what we're talking about here, just sort of discussing the rhetoric that the competing rhetoric, or the competing ideas of what is necessary right now. On the right wing, you have kind of the main villain in a lot of situations right now has been Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who is famous for, among many other things, famous for a photo he and his wife took at the, I forget where it was, one of the processing plants where they print actual sheets of dollar bills, where they held up a giant sheet of like $100 bills, you know, looking like some sort of Bond movie villains. But anyways, he recently, so the only action that the U.S. government has to this date taken to provide any relief for American citizens has been, you know, it was the CARES Act, where they basically passed a one-time stimulus injection of money. So that was, you know, relief to people along with relief to businesses and an injection of money into the stock market. What we saw out of that for individuals was a one-time payment of up to $1,200. And it was basically made clear by Mnuchin. He was interviewed about it, and he said that he felt that payment, that one-time payment of $1,200, would be enough to cover American families for 10 weeks, up to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Which, if you
which is kind of showing just a kind of complete lack of understanding of what it takes, you know, month to month for a family to live to. Exactly. I think it's important to note that this money also fluctuated depending on how much, you know, income you made. And it's also important to note that it was based on your 2018 tax return, not even 2019.
That's right.
Yeah. So if people were in maybe a more fortuitous situation or things were different, they could 100% see a change in kind of this money and not even get very much of it, even if right now they were disadvantaged in a kind of major way. So it was definitely interesting.
Yeah, and so, you know, obviously that means that folks who did not file in 2018 will not be receiving payments. And along with that, depending on when you did file or if you have a direct deposit account set up or a direct deposit set up with the IRS into your account, if you don't have that, you may not receive these payments for months.
For some time, yeah.
Yeah, which is like, if that's a one-time payment and you don't receive it for at least a month or so, like that, what relief does that really provide? And, you know, on top of that, of course, $1,200 doesn't really even cover rent in a lot of places around this country. So it's just like a total disconnect between what the amount needed by people is, like the amount that people are hurting versus what the government is willing to do. On top of that, Mnuchin, again, has allowed banks to seize these relief funds that are being deposited into bank accounts from the IRS. If people owe money, if there is any debt that the bank sees fit to put this money towards, they are allowed to seize that money and put it towards that. So despite the fact that this is supposed to be designed as relief money to help people live through this time, some people are not even receiving those funds because they're just going to service old debt. So that's pretty, it seems like that's pretty extreme, but that's sort of just the general way of being in the United States and the economy here. So, you know, there's a lot of other things that have been coming out, a lot of terrible rhetoric that's been coming from the right wing. And, you know, it's not even worth getting into all of it because some of it is just so ghoulish. But just the overall concept that the Republicans and the right wingers and a lot of like think tank people and like economists and professors and writers that have been pushing about how really the primacy of keeping the economy going versus like saving lives mm-hmm. seems to be the overall theme. And that it just comes up again and again in extremely disgusting and gross ways. What, you know, depending on who it is arguing and when it is arguing. But one thing that really does show is that like a lot of the people who are making those claims, you know, like for instance, Congress, a lot of people were arguing how these payments were too much or that, you know, unemployment payments might increase slightly during this period and they thought people didn't deserve that money. But Congress themselves, they are getting their full paychecks while going on an extended recess because of COVID. Yeah. So like, you know, once again, they are exempt from the reality that they're arguing against. And that's true of a lot of people making these arguments, writing these op-ed pieces and calling for the reopening of this and that.
Yeah. You know, while the bill was kind of being, worked on, there was a lot of news coverage about how, a lot of the right were concerned that someone might end up with more money than they normally get for that period.
Oh, no.
For
a few weeks.
Which is like might be a couple, $100 extra, which, you know, right now is probably needed. So I don't know. It was definitely a little bit of a. Not a straw man, but I mean, I think there were arguments being made not in good faith.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's fairly ghoulish, but it's also kind of par for the course for the discourse coming from the right wing in this country. So this moment has shown bare what jobs are really essential and what jobs are kind of unnecessary or rather, you know, just unessential. And they tend to be the jobs that are, you know, a lot of people spouting the rhetoric about like we need to get people back to work and it's all right if some people die, they actually tend to be often coming from people who exist in very unnecessary jobs, whereas the people they're talking about are frontline service workers and those that are 100% essential jobs, and those people are not getting the protection they need. So one thing that has come up throughout this period is that we're still seeing, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric again going around about like thanking these heroes and labeling essential workers heroes, but you know, so a lot of applause going to them, but not a lot of actual real world support. One thing that has happened is that OSHA, the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, has been receiving an increase in complaints, thousands of complaints about COVID-related safety violations mm-hmm. during this period.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, even though we can bang pots and pans and thank these healthcare workers and these essential workers, we are not doing anything to make their workplaces safer and make them, in turn, safer at their work.
Yeah, we touched on it last episode, but again, in these new kind of industries like shared economy, there are lots of situations where restaurant to restaurant, there is no kind of standard accepted kind of practices. So one restaurant might allow a Lyft driver or an Uber driver, to wash their hands, and another one might not.
Yeah.
Right. So we're operating in this situation where sometimes people are given gloves, sometimes they have to bring them on their own. We're really sitting in this situation where how much of this kind of stuff is on the company that's hosting the app versus the kind of contractual workers that they, you know, are high, quote unquote, hiring.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of, you know, they've set the company up in this way. So as it is a gray area, and so that they are able to kind of wiggle out of some of these things. And we're seeing now that when there's actually big problems, this is not how you need to set up something that's going to last a long time, right? This is how you set up something so that for the next three quarters, you generate value for your shareholders.
Right.
So, you know, or this is how you, you know, generate kind of demand and IPO, right, and get purchased. This is not like sustainable long-term growth.
Mm-hmm.
We're really just kind of propping up these, you know, pretty unprofitable companies that are just trying to grow really quickly. And I think it's definitely, we're seeing a little bit of that unstableness in the economy from that, you know. Exactly. And I do think right now too, this is a really good example of the kind of if not but when for UBI,
right?
Because obviously, this isn't going to happen right away in these types of numbers, but, you know, one of the biggest jobs in the entire country is truck driver, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
And when we start to automate a lot of these functions, we're going to see similar type situations where people are out of you know, work and are needed to kind of help from the government, and they can't purchase things, and the economy is going to, you know, suffer because of it. So I do think this is opening up, you know, in a positive light. You know, this is opening up the conversations that I think this country needs to have around what does it mean right to serve the economy. And, you know, if what you're doing, you can't be retrained or kind of put into a different part of the industry, you know, as we're always striving towards, you know, higher profits and higher revenues, what does that mean for the people that kind of get left behind? And we're seeing that happen right now.
Yeah. And we know, I mean, again, this, you know, this situation has shown bare cracks and fissures that have been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. Exactly like you were just saying. I mean, we know that the money does exist. We know that when needed, money can be accessed or created to deal with issues. And so, you know, we saw that with in March, there was the mass injection of capital from the Fed directly into Wall Street, and it was like $1.5 trillion. That was just created. So we know that that can happen if in a situation where we need to provide direct payments to people in order to keep them home and keep them safe and flatten this curve, that should also be something that we can just create and start working towards making more sustainable or making more long-term. And so I think that this really is sort of opening up space to have a conversation or to shift perspectives about what is possible, or like raise our sights about what is possible to do in terms of like providing for the common good in this country versus just like servicing the bottom line of a lot of companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, along those lines, there, you know, so obviously we discussed a lot of what the right wing has been doing. And if you are just joining us right now, we are discussing the state of essential workers in this pandemic.
Yeah.
And so,
I think it is important to mention, you know, kind of the positive, like, human ingenuity and kind of just overall strength that you are seeing, right? Like, I mean, in the state of New York, you saw thousands of kind of retired healthcare workers come back and start working again. I mean, I think people answering the call like that just shows you, you know, kind of again, when actually empowered to do the right thing, that a lot of times people will.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's the key word there is empowered. And I don't think some people are.
Right. I mean, certainly not. Like, not in the way that the system is set up. But yeah, like, we're seeing a lot of social solidarity. We're seeing like the goodness of humanity in a lot of ways, like very much contrasted. You're seeing a lot of the worst elements of humanity contrasted directly against people doing all they can to help themselves and their neighbors and people they don't know.
Well, I think too, I mean, you saw Oregon, I forget exactly how many ventilators they sent, but they sent several ventilators basically to New York to kind of help with it. And you saw Cuomo kind of talk about it, you know, couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it was sometime in the beginning of April.
I think that's really important, right? Because that's Oregon showing that we're watching our curve.
Yep.
And we know that Oregon's not going to get really bad until May. And every single less person that has it is less people that have it here.
Yeah.
Right? I think a lot of times someone's initial reaction is, well, don't we need those?
Right.
And I think obviously they've worked out a deal where they're going to get them back.
Yeah. I think Cuomo even said, like, we will help you out.
Yeah. So yeah. I really think it's really important to listen to the people who are knowledgeable on this subject. And while you're kind of a lot of just human initial reaction to things is hoard, or, you know, make sure that we're safe. In reality, you know, what Oregon is doing is going to help Oregon.
Right.
Because that's less sick people who are traveling. That's less sick people who are moving around. That's just less sick people here.
Yeah.
So I do, again, we've been pretty negative and it is a dire situation, but I think it's important to kind of call out some of the positives that's going on.
And that is really the logic behind the concept of like providing a universal healthcare system, because like ultimately we're seeing we are only as healthy as our least insured person, our least covered
the
person.
The lowest, lowest denominator is how we are, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, any single concept is the healthy people pay for the sick people.
Right.
And that's
how just
it
how
is.
It works. Yeah. And so, yeah, like you were saying, there are a lot of positives. Some of the positives that are coming out, in contrast to what we're hearing from the right wing and from the Republicans and from our president, we are on the left, we're seeing things, really positive signs. For instance, Ro Khanna, Representative Ro Khanna, and Senator Elizabeth Warren have recently, I think it was April 13th, they put forward an essential workers' bill of rights. So a bill to be passed that would provide a number of things, but basically the overall, it's a bill of rights for essential workers. Some of the main points are that they would require employers to provide at no cost to the employee personal protective equipment. And that includes contractors and subcontractors. The essential workers will also be required to be paid a robust premium for their work, including retroactive pay, which is basically just akin to hazard pay, which we have advocated for before.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure the overtime. Because you're seeing lots of grocery store workers who are working way more hours than they were before to, like, clean after and before.
And not being able to call in sick and things like that, and so, like, then the premium would be even higher for low-wage workers. Collective bargaining agreements would be protected, and even including during bankruptcy proceedings, the right to unionize would be protected during this time. There would also be a guaranteed universal paid sick leave and family medical leave. So that's, you know, completely necessary even before this, but very necessary now. There would also be a protection provided for whistleblowers who are expressing concerns about workplace safety issues during this crisis. There would be a congressional crackdown on misclassification of workers. So, you know, you classify them as contractors so as not to provide benefits. There would also be a guaranteed no-cost health coverage using public programs that already exist, including subsidizing 15 months of COBRA coverage. Mm-hmm. There would also be robust funding for childcare provided to essential workers so that they could go to work and not have to worry about, be concerned about where their children are and whether or not they're safe. And there would also be a position or a place held for workers at the discussion tables or at the table where they're discussing how to move forward with the responses to coronavirus, including safety protocols and plans for distributing personal protective equipment. So essentially treating workers as experts. And finally, they would hold corporations accountable for getting taxpayer money that should for providing all this stuff. So basically hold corporations accountable for making sure that workers are maintained or are taken care of during this time.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, incredibly an incredibly bright spot. You also seeing things from other, you know, people like Ilhan Omar put forward a rent and mortgage cancellation act.
Yes.
Pramila Jayapal and Rashida Tlaib put forward the ABC Act, which would provide $2,000 per month to every American, including an additional $1,000 a month for 1 year following the crisis. So there are things that are coming out that are positive, and the government, you know, progressive members of our Congress are trying to do the right thing. It is just a matter of whether or not they can get things through, you know, with the current administration we have and with the current leadership we have in the Senate, the Republican leadership. But like you said, there are a lot of really positive things happening right now.
Yeah.
On top of how dire everything looks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, for people who are on the front lines, I think the most important things right now are to, one, you know, make sure if you did lose your job, you know, applying for unemployment right now can kind of be a full-time job with how complicated it is and how hard it can be to get the money into your account. You know, many people are filling it out, you know, now and then not getting it for months.
Right.
So I think it's really important to do that. And then, you know, second, I think it's really important, as we've said multiple times throughout this, that it's you need to stay informed. And you need to find some sources, including the CDC and the WHO, to make sure that you're listening to kind of our experts and not kind of Facebook you know, kind of news.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's really important to not stay focused on 5G or Bill Gates or kind of whatever you're hearing around in your networks, and to really, you know, listen to kind of your local congressman or woman. And obviously, like I said, the CDC and the WHO, and make sure that, you know, you are trying to follow you know, all of the guidelines that are set forth. You know, obviously, you know, recently, you know, wearing a cloth mask has been recommended for kind of non-essential medical personnel. You know, not kind of your typical like N95 or anything like that, but just a cloth mask.
Just a covering.
And it's important to not be taking them from the people who need it, right? So there is lots of people on Etsy. And also if you're on, you know, if you, you know, you can kind of see around your neighborhood or different things like that, people are making these things available in kind of non-medical versions of them.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to stay informed, not take resources away from the people who need it, and to, you know, obviously stay as safe as possible.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we are going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. But yeah, as Elliot said, the most important thing you can do right now is stay home, stay safe, and make sure you're listening to scientists and doctors and not, you know, media talking heads. Until next time, I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you for listening to Labor Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness